With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA draft,
with the third pick in the 2018 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the 1998 NBA draft,
with the Los Angeles Clippers select
the Orlando Magic,
Michael Olcandy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
Welcome to Robin Hoop, an NBA Draft show here on Dash Radio's Nothing Net channel, where we bring rich takes to the poorly informed. Lots to discuss this week. And we are focusing on, we're going to continue focusing on one prospect each week. This week, no different, as we are going to touch on John A. Logan prospect, junior college prospect, Jay Scrubb. Now, what's very interesting about Jay Scrubb is that when he gets drafted, and I'm telling you right now, he will be drafted at some point, despite what others want to tell you, despite what so-called experts will say about their big boards and how they might not have him in the top 50 or top 60. I'm going to strongly disagree with that. He will be drafted. And when he does, he's going to be one of the few players ever to have been drafted straight out of junior college. You just don't see it very often. And it's a very overlooked sector of college basketball, unfortunately. And what's great about Jay Scrubb, not only is he a very unique player and somebody that has a very vast skill set, what I like about his path, the path he's going to end up taking to get to the NBA, I think it's very unique, and it definitely has a little bit of hardship involved, just given that you're having to really work that much harder to get noticed. It's not like you turn ESPN and all of a sudden you're watching some JUCO games. You know, you're all of a sudden watching Logan playing whoever they're playing that week. And so that's, to me, something that he brings to the table that a lot of prospects don't have, is a little bit of adversity. Not saying that most NBA prospects or college prospects don't have some level of adversity. My point is just, this is definitely a unique path that you do not see a lot of players end up taking. When you watch his overall game, one thing I will say is, if you want to watch his overall game, you actually can for free, and you can watch almost every single game that he had this past season very easily, too. All you have to do is go to the Logan Facebook page for the basketball team, and they actually have posted on there to watch for free the full games. Almost everyone, not every game from this past season, but it's rare that there's a game that you can't take advantage of, especially some of his highlight games. And let me tell you, when you take a look at some of his statistics, there are a lot of games that really, really jump off the page to me. And one thing you'll see as you kind of go through his statistics, and then if you go through his games as well, and again, I strongly suggest you do so, if you start at the beginning of the season and then kind of work your way through to the end, what really impresses me with him is how he was able to improve in so many different areas, not just in one area. Sometimes you'll see a guy, a good example would be in the NBA. Now, I'm a Wolves fan at heart, and a player that comes to mind at times would be Andrew Wiggins, a guy that really had all the talent in the world. And you would see in a lot of off seasons where he would have a focus on one area of his game, whether it would be shooting, whether it would be dribbling, whether it would be some other skill. And I think some players tend to do that. They say, all right, this is the skill that I want to get better at. For example, Denny Avdija, during the break in his season, and we talked about this on week number one, he is a player that really understood that his biggest weakness was shooting. And so he focused on that during that break, and he was able to come back stronger than ever when it comes to jump shooting. when you look at a player like Jay Scrubb, and we talk about how he has that unique path, there, he probably has to do more for his game than other players that have already really solidified themselves as one of the top prospects. And I think he absolutely did that when you look at this past season, especially when you look at it start to finish. Now, one thing you can do, and I think this is a good way to look at just looking at statistics. If you actually look at percentages, they tell part of the story, but they don't tell the full story. One way to do more of a broader look at how a player did or didn't play well during a season is to take a look at their game log. And I think that can really set the stage. When you look at how he started off the season, it was a little bit slower of a start. You know, 5 of 12 in the first game, 4 of 15 in the second game, 13 points, 12 points. And then all of a sudden, it was like a light bulb went off, and all of a sudden you see 30 points, 34 points, you know, 25 points, 38 points. He's putting up these really, really solid numbers. Now, sadly, that didn't continue through the whole stretch, and there was a few games that he was suspended for, and so that's part of his story as well. But I like that he was able to come back strong after the suspension. After that slow start, he definitely took off a little bit. Now, the shooting percentages weren't necessarily there in some of those big scoring games, and it was very much volume scoring. He wasn't able to be efficiently scoring the basketball. But if you look at the way the rest of the season goes, I think as time progressed in the season, I definitely saw a player that was more confident and shot the basketball at a much higher level than we saw previously. Now, overall, if you look at his statistics, they did go down from year one to year two. And that's something that is a little unfortunate. And that's not only three-point percentage, but that's free throw percentage as well. But overall, when I look at his career, I see a player that has the ability at that next level to be able to help out in many different areas of the game. I mentioned how he was able to improve shooting-wise as far as start to finish from this season. But some other areas that he really surprised me, because when I look at what other scouts and what other draft evaluators are talking about or focusing on, I really see them focusing a lot on some of the negatives. For example, would be his defense, talking about effort. And for me, anyways, when I watch him play, I don't see the effort concerns. I see a player that start to finish was putting in the work, putting in the effort, and just wasn't maybe there IQ-wise on the defensive end. To me, a guy that's able to effectively play defense as far as skills are concerned is trying, at least making the attempt to be in the right positions. They are watching the basketball but also keeping an eye on their own player, just seeing the court. I think he did that. I just think decision-making-wise, he wasn't all there at the start of the season defensively. When you watch it at the end of the season, though, especially when you look at towards the end when he had the tournament games as well as a few games in the regular season, I see a guy that was absolutely dialed in on the defensive end. And even in the early games of the season, you started seeing a guy that was able to sacrifice his body, willing to sacrifice it for charges, trying to do those little things. And yes, maybe there were times when I watch him that he tries to go for that steal. Maybe he tries to break a passing lane and maybe takes a few too many risks. But I think that's part of the journey as you become a better defender. And ultimately, I do think when he comes to this next level, he's going to be able to be a solid two-way prospect. On top of that, we're talking about a guy that's got 6'6" height. He's got good height. I think his wingspan's around 6'9", but I don't know that for sure. And that actually ties into my next point, how important the pre-draft process is going to be for where he ends up going in the draft. Now, if you look at some of the things that his agent and his dad have been putting out, you ask them, and of course, what's their job? As a dad, as an agent, your job is to make sure that this player or your son looks the best that he possibly can. And so you're going to want to put him in the biggest light. But I will say, teams that say, now his agent has said there's 12 teams that have come out to him and said, we see him as a lottery talent. I actually think that's not that far-fetched to say he's a lottery talent. Now, just because you have the talent doesn't mean that you necessarily are able to put it all together. That's the question mark. On top of that, he's playing at the junior college level. And so I think that gets overlooked a little bit because you say to yourself, all right, I have questions about the NBL. I have questions about the Israeli league. I have questions about EuroLeague. I have questions about these other leagues. And now, let's say I look at the NCAA. I'm still going to have some questions there, right? Even when you're playing at a high level college, you're not, every game's not going to be a professional game. So there's always going to be ways to judge the different levels of competition. And now you're talking about going a step below all of those and a junior college. I think a lot of scouts overlook it. And what's nice in regards to Jay Scrub and the pandemic is that because of that, I think people are diving into his footage more so than they might have in previous years. And the reason I say that is because one thing that you notice during the pandemic is, I think if you're a scout, and I'll tell you, in my experience as a draft evaluator, I watch a lot of film, and you can only watch so much of each prospect. At a certain point, you're just recycling old footage. And so eventually, I think some of these scouts that have been looking at maybe these higher level talent players, just in terms of playing at a higher level, whether it be, you know, the NCAA, EuroLeague, etc., eventually you said to yourself, all right, I've watched all these guys. I really got to dive deep into maybe some sleepers in this draft or guys that maybe are going to be more second round prospects. And so when all is said and done, he's going to be a guy that I think people have been able to evaluate pretty significantly, and they've been able to watch his film. But right now, a lot of the reports I've seen, I don't know that people see the same player that I do. And I ultimately think not only is his floor probably higher than many people give him credit for, but I think ultimately his ceiling, like I said, could be what his agent, what his father are talking about, which is lottery talent. I don't think he's going to go in the lottery. I'm not saying that. Is it possible? I guess. I mean, there's a team that might say to themselves, you know what, when we get to pick number 13 and all the way through pick 50, I have a lot of question marks. I don't see a guy that necessarily stands out. Maybe someone takes a chance on a guy that maybe has that higher ceiling, is maybe more of a home run swing type player. I think if that were to happen, would it shock me? No. But again, I think ultimately, when all is said and done, a lot of where he goes is going to depend on the pre-draft process. As of right now, we don't know what that's going to look like. Is he going to be able to have workouts? Is he going to be able to have some sort of, let's say, scrimmages at the combine, things that players normally get in that pre-draft process? We don't know because this pandemic has changed the way everything's going to look. Able to put on some sort of a pre-draft process, I think playing against other players is going to be huge for him because he's going to be able to show off. And at that point, if you're a scout or if you're a general manager and you say to yourself, I have some question marks about the level of talent he's playing against, what helps is if he's able to go up against maybe some other prospects that you already feel have shown that, and if he's able to play well against them, I do think that helps with some of the concerns that teams would have. And you'll see that make a difference in terms of where he ends up ultimately going. Now, I look at this draft and I say to myself, a lot of people view it as weaker, and maybe it's weaker just in terms of the guys that are more of a sure thing, but there's a lot of quality role players. There's a lot of guys, I think top to bottom, that could be steals for whatever team takes them, and definitely I'm going to say that Jay Scrub is one of those players. In addition, we haven't even talked about the fact that you watch his passing ability and his vision is really, really good for someone that is not necessarily listed as a point guard. And I think he's not going to play point guard in the NBA, but I think he could play some point guard in certain lineups and depending on the team that he goes to. Because if you watch him with Logan, a lot of times he's the primary ball handler, bringing the ball up, facilitating the offense. That's no small feat for anybody. Now, I do think if we're going to look at his overall game, there are some areas of concern. We touched on his shooting earlier. The other thing that I think he needs to improve on a bit would be his ball handling. To me, at times, it's a little bit loose. I've especially seen that in transition. Sometimes he gets a little sloppy with his ball handling, and guys can get their hands in there. And now you're talking about a jump to a higher level of competition. That's going to be something you're going to want to watch for. Now, we talked about his shooting a bit. I personally think he's got a good floor as far as his form is concerned. It's going to take some time to really fine-tune that, because the big issue for me when I watch him take shots, while the floor is there, I see a little bit of inconsistency in terms of the form. It doesn't seem to be the same each time. It's close, and it's a good start, but I do think he's going to have to put the work in. And my guess is right now he's doing just that. He's putting that work in on the jump shot. He's putting that work in on his handle. And that way, when it comes time to do workouts, if they are going to happen, when he gets to that combine, he's going to be able to impress the people that are there to take a look. So time will tell on that and what ends up happening there. The other thing I'll mention, so we talked about the shooting as being a bit of a concern. We talked about his handles. But aside from that, I don't watch his game and say, man, there's just these big flaws in his overall game. I think he brings to the table a lot. And that's why my view of what his floor is going to be is probably higher than most. But again, we don't know what's going to happen with the pre-draft process. We don't know what's going to happen with talent evaluation and what's going to happen there. And because of that, I do think ultimately, when I look at the draft, I think he's probably going to go somewhere in that early second round. Maybe he jumps into that late first, but again, that's going to depend a lot on that pre-draft process. So now we're going to jump into interviews. Tons of great guests this week. You are not going to want to miss a second of this. Again, you're listening to the Robin Hoop Dash Radio Show on Nothing But Net, covering the NBA draft and prospects. All right, this week on Robin Hoop, we are focusing on prospect Jay Scrubb, and there is no better way to do that than talking to our first guest. Welcome to the show, head coach of the John A. Logan Volunteers, Kyle Smith-Peters. Kyle, thank you for taking the time to join us this week.
Hey, appreciate you having me.
Before we jump in on Jay, I do definitely want to touch on just how impressive your coaching resume has been at Logan. 8 Coach of the Year awards in 7 years. You're listed first on the 50 most impactful coaches in JUCO men's basketball. And in addition, except for your first season, 20 wins in all your seasons. And I got to say, are we doing this wrong this week? Should we maybe be focusing on coaching legend Kyle Smith-Peters?
Well, that's awfully kind. I think you're focusing on the right aspect of it. So Jay's a much better player than I am coach, that's for sure. I've been very fortunate to be around a lot of really good coaches. I was very fortunate to get the opportunity to be a head coach at a young age and have to have some growing pains, especially in that first year. I've got a great administration, and most importantly, I'm at an institution that helps young kids, help mold young athletes, young kids into young men, and we have great resources and facilities academically, athletically, to help that happen. So I've been extremely blessed just with a lot of really good people and in a situation where we can get really good players and develop them. So that, to me, and the coaching staff that I have and have had has just been special. So I've been very lucky in this crazy business to just have such good people around to help with all that success and get to watch these fine young men become really good basketball players.
Yeah, I think having a good institution and having that stability makes a big difference. And kind of like you touched on, I think it's important for a lot of these players. People watch them in these games and they think of them just as players. But when you're evaluating these players and when you're dealing with them as a coach, I think it's really important too how they grow as a person as well on and off the court, because not only does that affect everyone around them, but it also, I think, affects the type of player they become too. So I think that's really important. I will say, for anyone that wants to watch a fun and talented team, I will add, I really enjoyed watching your team this season. And I also appreciate that almost all of your games are actually posted up on your team's Facebook page. So I encourage listeners to go and check that out. With this in mind, I would love you to touch on just JUCO in general. What do you say to critics who think that it could be tough for a player, in this case, Scrubb, to go from JUCO to the NBA, just given the differences in like level of competition and skill?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are always going to be critical and or maybe a little bit hesitant on something they don't quite understand or have a lot of information on. And I think that's the one big thing with junior college basketball. It's kind of hard to find sometimes. There's not a lot out there, and people are always going to have that hesitancy with something that's not, just a punch of a button. And I think that's where it kind of gets, that stigma a little bit. We get a lot of kids from a lot of different varieties, and that's the great thing about junior college basketball is we'll get Division I transfers, we'll get guys that didn't quite have the exposure they needed in high school. You get guys that struggled academically that just need maybe a little bit of extra help. So you get a lot of different aspects of it, and the simple fact that people forget a lot of times is we have 18, 19-year-old kids. You're lucky if you get a 20-year-old in there. So, for the way we roll, it's know, your junior and senior leadership is never prevalent in junior college. So you get guys at such a young age that have to grow up very fast. And, you know, the most experienced player we ever have on any year is a guy that's played 30 college basketball games. And you required him to lead a whole team. And I think it's a very good aspect, the growing up aspect for these young guys. And I think that's why we do see a lot of them go to the college level, especially, and have some really good careers and, you know, be very good leaders. But, you know, we've had a lot of really good teams, but there's also been a lot of really good coaches. You can go through the lines and see a lot of good Division I coaches that have, you know, came through the junior college ranks and, you know, been part of that. Talking to Buzz Williams about that the other day, he was a junior college guy. And, you know, just how many of those guys are out there, but it's never really focused on. People kind of forget about that aspect of those careers. You know, and speaking with a NBA scout the other day, was talking to the rest of his group about, hey, we need to go watch this junior college game. He said they all kind of looked up at him and said, are you serious? He goes, trust me, there's probably two or three NBA guys in this one game, and we could go to a Big 12 game, certain games, there not be maybe anybody. So, you know, he said there's just a lot of hidden talent that sometimes just doesn't come to the surface until a little bit later. But, you know, like I said, we've been very lucky to be, you know, I think considered one of the better ones around the country because of the players we've gotten. But we've got a great athletic director in Greg Sterick. He played at Kentucky. We've got great coaching staff. We've got great, you know, other programs. And when you can bring kids in from their environment into our situation and, you know, make it a very much of a business approach and based on accountability, we do tend to see a lot of success, you know, in these guys that goes under the radar for the most part.
Yeah, I really think that's fair. And one thing I think is great that you touched on is people don't realize how important junior college has been, not only to a lot of players, but to some coaches as well. You look at, you know, over the years, there's been some big name guys that have taken part in junior college and gotten their start there. You mentioned Buzz Williams. I know Rick Adelman did some work in the junior college in his early in his career. Flip Saunders, another guy. So, I mean, so it's one of those things where I think people don't recognize just how important junior college is to the game. And it's a very important aspect to a lot of these players and what they're able to do. You also touched on the youth that you experience a lot in your league. And part of that, Jay did an interview a couple months back, and he talked about one of the ways that he grew as a player while he was at Logan was in terms of maturity. And I think that's a valid point, that when you're dealing with kids that are so young, you don't have that veteran presence in the locker room on the court. And so that can make a difference. But I do think you guys have done a great job of instilling that in your players and the importance of that. And I think that's going to translate, like in Jay's case, that'll definitely translate over into the pro game as well.
Yeah, so I believe so. And people forget, and Jay, you know, obviously is an exceptional player, even from a young age. I, you know, it's the one thing I tell every scout, everybody here, you know, it's not like Jay became good at Logan. No, he refined a lot of his things. He was already good before we got him. You know, his whole thing was getting to understand the side of discipline, and not only just, you know, but on the floor of being able to play under control, different things like that, and he embraced it and did a really good job. I mean, the one thing that's, you know, very uncommon, I think, now is, I have plenty of recruiting service guys that say this, if you're not a top 100 player, why would you not go to junior college for a year and just play a lot and get that experience? You go to a lot of places and great, great experiences being at those places, but there's just nothing that can really replicate getting to be on the floor and getting to be on the floor a long period of time. And, you know, I think that's the one thing where Jay had really, you know, I think helped himself with being able to do that. You look at a guy like Ja Morant that goes to a Murray State and a similar state, a lot of other opportunities, but goes somewhere to play and play right away. And it really allowed Ja to find who out, you know, find himself and find who he was going to be as a player. And obviously we all enjoyed that process. And I think Jay had a very similar experience. You know, all of a sudden, you know, everything's thrown on you. You're the best player on your team. You need to be the leader. You need to be the scorer. You got to be the best defender. You got to do all these things extremely well without much guidance from other players because they're all the same age. And people didn't realize, you know, Jay stepped foot on our campus at 17 years old. He's a young prospect. You're looking at a guy that goes through college. He's going to be a 21-year-old senior. And, you know, for him to have this ability and for him, like I said, to have matured so quickly over those 2 years with us at Logan was extremely impressive for a guy that truly hasn't been, you know, really experienced with much older players around him getting to learn, you know, all the knowledge and all the stuff that they're going to be able to teach him. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that aspect of it when he's able to get around a player that's, you know, 25, 26, 27 or so, and teaching him some other things that, you know, obviously coaches, I think, can do a lot of good things, but your peers and your players are going to give you a lot of good information to be able to help you along that road and make you a better player.
Yeah, yeah. Who you're around, whether it's coaches, whether it's veteran players and other things, can make a huge difference in terms of the growth or the curve of your career. And you, one thing that you touched on is his age, and I don't think people bring that up enough. I mean, he's just 19 years old. Granted, when the draft actually happens, because it's later, he'll be 20, but he would have been 19 with 2 years of college experience, and you just don't see that when it comes to NBA draft. That's not something that most players have, and so I do think that's a step in his favor for sure, that he's been able to play that much. And the NBA especially, you'd see how the G League has really expanded over the years. They see and realize the importance of these young players just getting on the court. And so, like you said, it's good to go to a junior college if maybe you're not one of those high prospects, because you see some of these, you know, quote unquote, big name players. But if you go to a school where there's other guys that are maybe a little better than you, you're not going to play as much. And so I think some players need to take more advantage of that. I think that's very important, that just getting on the court, being able to play, you know, scouts, for example, are able to see much more of you. You're able to grow as a player. I think a lot of that is very important. Speaking of kind of improvements and things like that, specifically with Jay, are there some areas that you felt that his time at Logan, that he really made some improvements, you know, over these 2 years?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think in getting Jay, the thing I underrated very much was his passing ability. He's actually an exceptional passer, and we got to see that when other good players were around him. We were fortunate this past season, you know, Jamarion Sharp, who's, you know, 7'2", 225, and Sidney Curry, 6'8", 270. And we had good players with Jay, which, you know, when you're a good player, it really helps when you have other good players around you, because then your plays really kind of tend to be better. And, you know, he had bigs that he could really throw to and catch the ball. And it's amazing how good of a passer he was. Boss Eric Boone did a great job of you know, being with Jay at the top of the floor. But, you know, when you have those type of players around, you can kind of start seeing those things come through. And Jay did a great job, in my opinion, of learning not to just settle as a jump shooter. You know, he's got an unbelievable pull-up game and get to the rim and finish very, very well. I think he really learned, you know, and improved on just how to make the defense, you know, react to him. And what I mean by that is, don't come down and just settle. Come down and be able to, you know, make the defense make a decision, and not only make yourself really hard to guard without the ball. And those are some of the things we emphasize that I think he got much better at now. He's so good with the ball in his hands. And the one thing we really stressed to him this second year was be a really good screener. Try to be a really good guy without the ball. And I think that's going to be an aspect to him at the next level that will make it very difficult as a 6'6 wing. You know, everyone's good with the ball in their hands. How good are you without the ball? And Jay can catch and shoot so well. People don't realize how well he can shoot. His three-point percentage this year was a little lower than it was the year before. As a freshman, he shot like 48%. But he came out and kind of forgot his way a little bit. His head got a little bit too big to fit through the door when all this was going on. Every coach in the country is reaching out to you, and you had, you know, kind of sort of settling for shots. But, you know, Jay, in his defense, he'd never been through it. He'd always been a talented player, but he never got exposed to all the hype. And the thing that I say the most about Jay that was extremely impressive was the fact that he went through all that. He hit the rock bottom. I mean, we're sitting there at 4-4 at one point because he wasn't playing well. You could tell the stress was wearing on him a little bit. And he bounced right back and became the best player, not only in junior college, but one of the best players across the country. And I think that was a great experience for him when your numbers aren't great. You know, he ended up shooting, I think, 34% overall from the season from three. But if you look at, like, the last 15 games, he was shooting above 40 again. So he got back to finding his way, and I thought that was a very good learning experience for him, how to improve getting yourself out of a tough spot and a tough situation with the rest of the country looking at you. And, you know, he did such a wonderful job of leading us, you know, which I felt would have been a very good chance at winning a national championship the way we were playing. And we were playing that way because of the way, you know, Jay was playing and conducting himself.
Yeah, if you start at the beginning of the season and kind of watch his journey as a player, I do think he made really large strides. And I'm glad that you mentioned his passing, because I don't think enough people talk about that, especially towards the end of the year. I'm watching him, you know, he's driving in and he's dishing to the cutter, or he's in transition, he's finding the open man. Not only is his passing good, but his vision. And I think that's very underrated. I know you guys had him bringing the ball up a lot, kind of facilitating the offense. And it was very obvious that he felt good with the ball in his hands. And there's a lot of players that I feel like when you get that ball in their hands, they don't have that confidence or that basketball IQ to make that right decision. And when it comes to Jay, you pretty much always feel he's going to do exactly what he needs to do. I also will agree, yeah, when you watch his shooting towards the end of the season, he definitely looked like he was feeling much more confident. And maybe to start the season, maybe he bought into his own hype a little bit, and all these people are talking about him and he's becoming more of a household name. I think that can make an impact on what you do on the court. But the biggest thing is, how do you then grow from that? And I think he made a really big impact doing that. So I'm very impressed with him as a player. What can you tell me? One thing that he kind of touched on, he feels, I listened to an interview with him and he talked about his leadership. How do you see Jay in terms of a leader, both on and off the court?
I think Jay got it much better. Like I said, when he first came in as a freshman, we fortunate for him, he was with some really good people, David Sloan, Vonnie Patterson, Jonah Jackson, you know, all three Division I players had very good seasons last year. And, you know, I think that helped him at least allow to have a blueprint of what needs to happen and how you need to lead. And he got better as the year went on. I think one of the most impressive things I thought from a leadership standpoint was, you know, you always talk about your best player needs to be, you know, the guy that goes, needs to be the best player in practice, needs to go as hard as he can. Well, you know, sometimes to go 100% on it, it's just sometimes unrealistic. And especially for those really good players, it just sometimes doesn't happen. But the thing that I thought was really good with Jay, and where I thought he started gaining his ground again, was the amount of time he was spending in the gym, you know, after practice. You know, we'd go to a shoot around before we played that night. He'd stay another hour after the shoot around getting shots up. And, you know, those type of things, I think, just speak volumes as a leader, especially if it's your best player. And, you know, those other guys see that and they feel guilty about not spending that time as well. And then that's where we really started taking stride, was because of his actions, I think, not just only in the practices, but on his own. And it encouraged a lot of the other players to be able to do that as well. I mean, you know, like I said, you throw an 18, 19-year-old into the fire about being a leader, that's hard, no matter what level you're at. And it was really good for Jay to get to experience that, you know, on and off the floor with this group. And I was really impressed with the simple fact, after we win our region championship, we're waiting to go to the national tournament, which obviously got canceled. That very next week of practice, I wasn't expecting to not have a great week because we didn't play for 10 days. The way the national, we got a bye, the way the national tournament set up, so I'm sitting there thinking we're going to be pulling teeth. And, you know, we come out there, we practice Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Jay Scrub went so hard and was leading the practice so well through a competitive standpoint. We had to give him Friday, all those guys Friday. We're like, we can't keep beating each other up like this. They're going so hard and we're so driven. It was all because of Jay's mentality. And, you know, I was really happy to see that growth in him, because that head that couldn't fit through the door has now been humbled to the simple stand. He knows how quickly this can go away if you don't continue to work. And I thought that was a really big aspect, not just as an individual, but as a team and as a leader, for him to be able to recognize that and know how important that practice was. Those practices were 10 days before a national tournament. Not a lot of guys at 18, 19 years old are going to understand and realize that. And Jay did a great job of, you know, leading us through that going into a, you know, possible national tournament run.
Yeah, I think leading by example is something you just can't teach. Some guys just kind of pick it up. Some guys grow into it. But I definitely think what you said is very important, that Jay was able to lead by example and other players see that, they pick it up. And just as a team, it really helps you to grow, and that can make a really big difference. And obviously these leadership skills and these off the court things that you see, and then you look at him on the court and you see a lot of that too, whether it's on defense, him pointing other things out to other teammates, whether it's you know, the communication that you see when you watch games. To me, he seems like he's a very good communicator. And if you're an NBA team, all of these skills as a player, and then the things you hear about him as a person, that's what you're getting when you draft Jay Scrub, and I think that can't be overlooked. I do want to end it with one more question here before we let you go. It has been said that 12 teams view Jay as a lottery talent. As someone that has coached him for two seasons, what do you think? Just how talented is he?
Oh, and, you know, Jay's just scratching the surface. And of those teams that said it, those are the teams that really spent a lot of time. We had every NBA team come in and watch Jay. We had, you know, throughout the season. And the teams that noticed that were the teams that came in and spent multiple days and just saw him on an everyday, you know, level. And there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, his ability, his talent level, his athleticism, you know, and even of his growth and maturity have allowed him to be in a very good position moving into the draft. And, you know, I'm extremely proud of him, but there's, you know, very little doubt in my mind that, you know, Jay is going to be one of the better prospects in this draft. And, you know, like I was explaining to Jay, just because, you know, someone says you're a top 15 talent in the draft doesn't possibly mean you're a top 15 prospect. You know, work on that prospect area. And I think that's a lot of where Jay has really been focusing a lot of his attention, is just from the standpoint of coming across as a mature young man. And, you know, I've heard nothing but great things from his interviews from these NBA teams, just how upfront Jay has been, how honest he's been, even with some of the, you know, issues he had dealt with. I mean, with the suspension during the season and how much that was good for him and why it happened, and, you know, not pointing blame. And that's a lot of growth and showing a lot of leadership, you know, is growing into a young adult. But I won't be shocked by any means, you know, when the draft finally gets there, which seems like it's an eternity away, for Jay Scruggs' name to be extremely high on that board when these teams actually start to get watching him in person. Right now it's all interviews, it's all film, as we talked about. And, you know, the impressive thing about Jay is when you see him in person, face-to-face, and watch him go out there and hit 10, 12, 14 shots in a row, and realize that guy's only 19 years old, right, at the point. And, you know, I won't be surprised to see him a lot higher than what many people expect him to be.
Yeah, he's one of those players. I think there's a list of players that, when it comes to the pre-draft process, maybe it doesn't make sense for them to do individual workouts or some of the things that you see in terms of scrimmage at the combine. I think Jay would absolutely benefit from being able to get in front of people, play against other competition, get his shots up. I do think he would very much jump up on draft boards if people get a closer look at him. So I agree. I think that's going to be a big difference maker. And with the pandemic, we don't know what's going to happen there, but I definitely hope they have some sort of a pre-draft process, because it would be great to see just how far up Jay could go in the draft. Thanks again for joining us, Kyle, and I wish you guys with Logan, and wish you specifically with your coaching career the best of luck going forward.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. All right, welcome back to Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show. And now we have the pleasure to be joined by Matt Babcock, NBA draft analyst from Babcock Hoops and former NBA agent. Matt, thanks for taking the time to join the show this week.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me.
This week, our focus is prospect Jay Scrubb from Johnny Logan Junior College. Now, during this pandemic, interviews have been a focus for NBA teams and scouts. Interviews can be a good way to learn about a person, or in our profession, specifically players. So far in this pre-draft process, Jay has interviewed virtually with 22 teams. And then earlier this year, you had the pleasure of getting to interview Jay. What were your impressions of him?
Yeah, well, first of all, just to give you a little background. So I got put in touch with Jay and his dad, you know, before they decided to go pro and everything. And, you know, I was just sort of giving them advice, you know, from being a, you know, being a former agent, you know, just as far as how to tackle the process, you know, sort of the questions to ask different agents, things like that. And we kept in touch. And I told him that, you know, I do a number of consulting, you know, aside from my media business. And when they do decide on an agent, you know, the you know, give my name to the agent and have them call me. And so, long story short, they you know, decide to go in the draft, stay in the draft, and sign with an agent. That agent called me and hired me to help prep Jay for some of these interviews. So I've really gotten to know him, you know, since our initial interview when he did announce that he was going pro. And just a really good kid. You know, I think he's got, you know, a little, you know, a different path than a lot of these prospects have, you know, as far as being five-star recruit and going to Duke and that sort of thing. You know, he's taken an unorthodox approach, you know, as far as getting into the draft. But yeah, just a good kid that, you know, wants to get good. You know, we're just trying to help give him some tools so he can succeed.
Yeah, you mentioned how it's kind of unorthodox. And in the long run, sometimes those are the players that tend to flourish because they've had a little more hardships on their path to the NBA. And so that can make a pretty big difference. So I actually do think that's a definitely a plus for him that he's able to work through that. And he really does seem like not only a good player, but a good kid as well. Now, your last mock draft, you had Scrub going at 40 to the Grizzlies. And I would love to see him go to a young team like the Grizzlies that can afford to play him maybe earlier than some of the other contenders likely would be able to. Do you think that is truly a good fit team-wise? Or are you kind of thinking it's mostly the area of the draft he's going to go in?
You know, I think it's a good fit. You know, the way I sort of see the draft, generally speaking, is the further you get down in the draft, the less, you know, picky you need to be as far as how much does that guy fit with what you're doing. So as you get in the second round, I mean, I think with Memphis specifically, you know, if Jay were to click, you know, and really, you know, develop properly and maximize his potential, I think he'd be a great running mate with Ja. You know, and I think at 40, you know, even though Jay is somewhat of a high risk, high reward type guy, just because the sample size to evaluate him is small and against, you know, lower competition, you know, get a high upside guy that, you know, that could be a good fit for them long term.
Yeah. And while he didn't play there, I do think the fact that Louisville wanted him to come in and be a part of their program, so it really tells you what kind of a player they felt he was. And while he didn't play against that high level of competition, it's good to see that those higher level teams wanted him in the fold, and that can and really be something that scouts or NBA teams can definitely look at. Now, one area that, as far as his game is concerned, that I don't think he gets enough credit is in his passing. So from the beginning of the season to the end, when I watch him, I really see great strides that he's made in that area. A couple of the end of season and tournament games, I was honestly shocked at how impressive he was with his decision-making and then his overall vision on the court. In addition, so kind of all year, the coach has been willing to have him bring the ball up and facilitate the offense. And with this in mind, do you think some teams will look to use him at times, at least, at point guard, given the position flexibility of today's NBA?
Well, you know, like I said, Jay has a lot of talent. He's got great size, athleticism, and just the raw tools that you want. I mean, he handles the ball well. He's got a natural feel. You know, just the overall skill set is there. I think the biggest thing with him is just getting caught up as far as the understanding the game, the X's and O's, the little nuances. And so, I mean, my concern with Jay would be he's probably not ready to play point guard yet, just because that's a hard position to play, especially for a young guy. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I think he does just have a natural feel handling the ball and you know, potential to be a good playmaker. But you know, he's probably a couple years away as far as just getting his basketball IQ, you know, caught up to where, you know, he could actually be used in different spots with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned IQ, and in your interview, Jay actually mentioned, I would like to improve my overall basketball IQ and my skills on the defensive end, but I don't think these are major weaknesses. So, you know, strangely enough, this is where I and I would say other evaluators don't agree on something. So I've seen a number of scouts that kind of question his effort on defense, but I haven't seen that necessarily in watching his footage. I think the effort has been there, but he's been able to improve more so as the season has progressed. And one example I think of is kind of all season long, Jay was more than willing to sacrifice his body on the defensive end for charges, something I don't think you see from players that are really lacking effort on that end. From what you have seen on the court, do you think he possesses the work ethic and the skills necessary to not only continue to improve in those areas, but end up being a solid two-way player eventually in the NBA?
You know, I think he's got the talent and physical tools to be a good defender. And one thing that he and I have talked about is, you know, at John A. Logan, you know, he was clearly the best talent every time he stepped on the floor. And I mean, probably the, you know, most talented junior college player we've seen in years. And so with that said, I mean, he was asked to do so much offensively that on the defensive end, sometimes he coasted just to kind of preserve some of his energy. And so I talked to him about, hey, you know, you do have a ton of talent, even on an NBA level. But in order for you to succeed in the NBA and kind of get over that initial hump, you're going to have to defend. You're going to have to really apply yourself. And it's a whole new game. And, you know, in order to earn the respect of your head coach and your coaching staff, you're going to really need to kind of turn it up a notch and really make a conscious effort to develop your work ethic and just kind of instead of having your moments where you kind of turn it on the defensive end, you know, really have like no slip ups where it's, you take every single possession seriously. And so I think that's just part of, it's part of, you know, growth and development for a young player, just, you know, learning to be, you know, a well-rounded guy. And a lot of that is just, you know, mental approach and discipline.
Yeah. And I think that's a valid point that he's a very young prospect. You talk about he's going to be, if the draft had already occurred like it normally would have, he would have been 19 despite having 2 years of college experience. And that's not something you see with a lot of people. For example, if he had gone, you know, through 4 full years of schooling, he still would have only been 21, which you don't normally see when it comes to seniors jumping into the draft. You know, in addition to his defense, one area that I kind of looked at when I was evaluating him, and I actually haven't seen evaluators touch on this much as far as the criticisms that I've seen, and I think would be his handle and his shooting. Now, while I do think he's got a pretty solid base in terms of his shooting form, there are some questions given that the numbers got worse from year one to year two, and he seems to lack a little bit of consistency when it comes to like touch, especially when I look at his free throws. Now, whether season one, where he shot a better percentage from three, or season two, I noticed the volume has never been in a place where I feel like defenders have to worry about him shooting threes. And then when it comes to his handle, it just seems a little loose at times. And when you get to that higher level of competition, I definitely think defenders can exploit that more so than you might see in the junior college level. So what are your thoughts in regards to both his handle and his shot? And do you think without a effective long ball, do you think his time in the NBA will be cut short?
Well, you know, the first time I ever saw Jay was at USA under-19 trials last summer. And on that team, I mean, there was a number of top guys, Tyrese Halliburton, Kira Lewis, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green. I mean, really stacked team. He ended up not making the team. But, you know, I didn't even know who he was going into that little mini camp. And, you know, he really stood out. I mean, among all these big name guys, he was one of the first guys I wrote up. And the first, you know, the biggest things that stood out was his ability to shoot from outside. Just, you know, a natural, nice, pure stroke, quick release, deep range, and then he jumped out of the gym. And so, like, those are two things that really translate to the next level, in addition to, you know, having good size, you know, being 6'5", 6'6". And so he's shooting the ball. I think that is, you know, long-term going to be one of his biggest attributes that he brings to the table. As far as the handles, I think he handles it decently right now as far as, you know, creating some distance between him and his defender. I don't see him being like a primary ball handler at this point, but he does put on the floor enough to where he's not limited to just being catch and shoot and you know, straight line drive. So definitely something I think he can expand on, but I do have some confidence that he could do some stuff with the ball.
Yeah, I do think a lot of it just comes down to consistency, which I mean, you see that with a lot of young players. So that's not really any surprise. Now, he's a very athletic player. When you watch him play, he has lots of skills on the court, but it's fair. You know, for teams to say, all right, I'm going to judge him. But the problem we run into is that I'm judging him based on the lower level of competition that he's playing at Logan. Now, that raises the question, how is his game going to translate to the higher level of the NBA or even, let's say, the G League if he ends up playing there? Ultimately, do you think his game will translate? And if it does, will it take time for him to adjust to the differences that you see? Or is he going to be able to make some sort of an immediate impact?
Well, I've talked to him about this quite a bit. You know, I mean, his dad is his biggest fan and you know, really talks him up pretty big, saying he thinks to be a lottery pick and he's going to start day one. And I'm trying to be, you know, a little bit of the voice of reason and, you know, talk to him about, hey, you know, early on, I mean, you might not play. You know, you might play some time in the G League and you really got to figure out how to get on an NBA court and stay there. And so early on, you know, just doing the little things, you know, hitting open shots. I mean, you're not going to be a guy where, you know, if you're getting limited minutes, you're not going to be asked to do a whole lot other than the little things. So, you know, you start there, you really master your craft and your role, and then you expand on that. And so I think, you know, he's got to come in and really just focus on the little things, you know, hitting wide open shots, taking good shots and you know, applying yourself on the defensive end, like I mentioned. And so I think if he does those things, I think he could end up having a really great career, but he's got to start there. It starts with the little things, and then you build off of that.
Yeah, I think a big part of being successful in a player's role is accepting the role. And it sounds like he's very accepting of whatever they're going to have him do at that next level. So whether it's G League, whether it's getting minutes at the beginning, I like that he's able to kind of take that in stride. I think that's important if he's going to be successful at the next level. Now, one thing you talked to Jay about during your interview was the importance of the pre-draft process, just in terms of being able to move his draft stock up. A big part of that would be being able to play against other prospects in workouts or combine scrimmages. If you had to guess, do you think the NBA finds a way to make some of this work? And if so, could Jay show enough with measurements and his play to maybe jump into the first round?
Yeah, this was part of the conversation I had with him and his dad early on before he had signed an agent that, you know, with everything being so uncertain, especially at that point of how this pre-draft process was going to look, that definitely hurt Jay. I mean, he needs some exposure. I mean, even though, you know, at least some of the guys on NBA front offices have seen him, he's done enough to intrigue everybody, but there's a big difference between intrigue and your general manager pulling the trigger and giving you, you know, a contract. And so I sure hope that they put together some kind of combine. I know that they're trying, even if it's just, you know, done remotely where just the players go in, do some physical testing, medicals and all that. I think the more exposure Jay gets, you know, the higher he'll go.
There's only so much you can gain from watching film. Seeing someone in person just can leave a much bigger impact, whether you're a scout or a GM. And so, yeah, seeing him actually go up against somebody would make a huge difference. Now, let me end this here with a kind of a two-part question. His agent has said a number of teams view him as a lottery talent. Do you think there's any way, either through a pre-draft process or the idea that this is maybe, by some standards, a weaker draft and teams may be more willing to maybe take a risk, that this actually happens? Is there any way that could happen? And is there a team or teams that you think could be a good fit for his game and development?
Well, he certainly has the upside. I mean, to put him in the conversation of, you know, that first group of guys, you know, mid first round picks, late lottery. I don't expect that to happen. You know, just kind of going back to what I was saying of missing out on the traditional pre-draft process is, you know, I think he's going to intrigue everybody. Everybody that's seen him, you know, knows he has that kind of raw talent, but having the confidence level to use a pick like that, it's a whole different conversation. And I don't think they're going to be able to, you know, get him to that point. But, you know, I mean, if he ended up being like a late first, early second, I think that would be very, very reasonable expectations. And, you know, as far as specific teams, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, the later you get in the draft, you know, less of a, you know, a focus there is on filling needs. It's more of just, hey, let's, you know, do we want an upside guy? Do we want a guy that can be plug and play? I think somebody will bite on Jay just with his upside and develop him rather than target him as a guy that could fit, you know, fit into a rotation day one. So, I mean, I think he's the kind of guy that every team is a possibility, really, because, you know, he would be a long-term asset for a team.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And, you know, bottom line, he's a very intriguing prospect, and I'm very excited to see what team he ends up going to. Before we let you go, do you have any stuff that you want to plug, any you know, changes to your mock that are coming up or any articles? And then where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Matt Babcock 11 and then at Babcock Hoops. And then, yeah, just follow our site, babcockhoops.com. I mean, we're doing an assortment of articles, you know, mostly on the NBA draft. We started, you know, doing some videos. We'll have some video breakdowns of the players and different interviews of our staff, which is comprised of, you know, former NBA scouts and executives, including myself. And so, yeah, just follow us on babcockhoops.com, and we're going to keep pumping out content.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for joining us this week, and hopefully talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
All right. Welcome back to Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show. This is the Nothing But Net channel on Dash Radio. We now have the pleasure of being joined by the Knicks beat writer and contributor for Empire Sports Media, Mikey Murphy. Mikey, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me. Good evening, Robin Hoop. Good evening to all the Minnesota diehard basketball fans listening to Robin Hoop Radio. It's a pleasure to be on.
I want to start by asking you, now this week's episode, we are featuring a look at Jay Scrubb, a prospect that I really, really like. I want to ask, what brought Jay to your attention, and what is it about him or his game that makes you like him, as you put it, as an off-the-radar talent?
You know, Jay Scrubb, man, he's a 19-year-old junior college player of the year, went to John A. Logan in Louisville, Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. And he's a 6'6", 200-pound lefty perimeter scorer who can jump out the gym. And, you know, on that basketball court, he definitely shows a different kind of hunger. And I like to see that, man. It shows. It's oozing out of him.
Yeah, I think when you watch certain prospects, you don't necessarily see the passion on the court, and you don't see maybe the drive. And from him, I really feel like he's going 100% pretty much every time he steps on the court, which is really cool to see. But that begs the question, Does the lower level of competition that he was up against have you worried at all about his game being able to translate to the NBA?
You know, that's always in the back of your mind when it comes to JUCO players or any other prospect playing in below average talent amongst them. But, you know, he has the size. The fact that he's 6'6", he has like a 6'9 wingspan. You know, he'll be a tough matchup in the NBA for smaller guards, I would say. So, you know, he just needs some, you know, training, and he just got to keep pushing and get molded. Hopefully he gets into the right situation once he gets drafted.
Yeah, you definitely see with some of these prospects, especially a guy coming out of JUCO, you want them to go to a team that really can build him up and hone in on his skills at the NBA level. Now, you mentioned his the physical aspects of his game, what's being 6'6", 6'9" wingspan. Now, if the NBA is able to organize some sort of pre-draft prospect or process, I do think that Jay would greatly benefit from being able to show those physical measurements, as well as his ability to play against higher competition in, say, workouts or scrimmages. Where do you think that he could end up? And ultimately, do you think higher competition workouts would hurt or help his stock?
Ultimately, if he plays his cards right, it will help him. I would say it'll probably push him up to a late first round. And if somebody wants to reach for him, maybe middle first round, you know? Anything could happen once, you know, he gets into the gym with real prospects and agents and scouts. You know, actually the scouts are able to, you know, judge him and judge his game. It'll be beneficial for him.
Yeah, I definitely think it can make a difference and really help his stock out. There's some prospects where I feel like that process isn't going to help them because all it's going to do is maybe drop it if they don't play to the level that you normally see. But with Jay, I think it's a good opportunity for them to be able to see something they maybe haven't seen if he's able to go up against that higher level of competition. So recently, Jay's agent said there are 12 teams that have said Jay has lottery talent. And you mentioned how it's possible. Maybe he moves up into that first round. In general, do you disagree or agree that he has lottery talent? And when you look specifically at this draft, it's a little weaker. Where do you think he should go? And where do you think he ultimately will go?
I put him in the same draft position as, let's say, Aaron Naismith. Around that area in the middle first round. The only reason I wouldn't say lottery is because, like you mentioned before, the JUCO competition. But to be fair, I would say middle first round. I would be very surprised if they reached on a lottery pick for him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of that is just agent speak. You know, they come out and they say these things. They want to talk up their player, especially when if there's no pre-draft process, and given we haven't seen basketball in a long time, there's nothing that anyone can really say to refute that. Now, in watching him specifically play, I was pleasantly surprised by his defense and his passing. But when I watch him, I also have some question marks regarding his ball handling and his shooting, especially given his numbers shooting-wise have dropped from year one to year two. When you watch him play, what are some areas of concern that you have in his game, but also what are some strengths that you feel he could bring to an NBA team?
You know, watching him play, I do have a few concerns with his defense. However, as far as playmaking, I think he wants to prove that he's a better playmaker than he's been showing. And I think he has a chip on his shoulder in that department.
Yeah, I think that's well stated. The defensive thing is interesting to me because you're not the first person that's brought the defensive concerns up. When I watch his game, the one thing I'll say is I know some people think it's an effort issue, and I don't think it's effort for, at least for me, when I watch him play, I do think he gives the effort. I just don't think maybe the defensive IQ is fully there yet. And if you look at his earlier games in the season to his later games, the one thing that I really appreciate, and this is why I don't really question his effort, is he's willing to take charges and he's willing to kind of sacrifice his body on that end of the floor. To me, if it was an effort issue, I don't think you'd see that as much. You know, when you look at some of the top prospects in this draft, guys like LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, I do question effort, because physically those are guys that should be able to do things and not have that issue. And you don't see them necessarily sacrificing their body like that. So to me, I do think potentially, at least, he could end up being a pretty good two-way prospect.
Absolutely. Taking charges, that's the ultimate dirty work on defense. And if he's willing to do that, you know, that's going to get a lot of scouts' attention, you know. And, you know, there's certain things scouts look for, and on the defensive end, that's one of them. And defense is something you have to want to do. And if he wants to do it, it'll show. It will definitely show.
Yeah, you definitely see that when you watch certain prospects. It's, I think, on the defensive end especially, because there are guys that I think can float a little bit on offense, and that doesn't always get picked up. But when you're watching on the defensive end, it's really hard to hide flaws and hide effort. And so I completely agree there. Now, I got two questions left here, and what I want to do is take a moment looking specifically at the Knicks. Do you think Jay specifically would be a good fit for the Knicks? And if he was to slide there, would you be willing to take him at pick 38?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think he'll be a decent pick for the Knicks, somebody who can come off the bench. Not this season, but somebody who can be molded, like by, say, a Tom Thibodeau, if the Knicks hired him. You know, a young guy like Scrub could use guidance of a veteran coach like, say, a Tom Thibodeau, or say if the Knicks hire or Kenny Atkinson. So it's a lot of moving parts with the Knicks right now, but if Jay Scrub lands on the Knicks, definitely a prospect who can shoot the three, a lefty, he can score from the perimeter. You know, he got Mitch on the side of him, could throw the lob to a young group they can build together. I could see that happening.
Actually, you bring up one other thing I'll touch on quick. You mentioned Tom Thibodeau, Kenny Atkinson. Do you have a favorite? It's not draft related, but do you have a favorite as far as possible coaching hires for the Knicks?
Yeah, my personal favorite would be Kenny Atkinson, due to the style he played at Brooklyn, an up-tempo style, one center who can dunk and shooters around him. And you know, the Knicks, that would be a nice style in New York in Madison Square Garden, to be honest, I would think. But I don't have an issue with Tom Thibodeau either.
Being from Minnesota, I can tell you that if you had to choose between the two, I think you'd like Kenny more, only because, and now granted, things could change because, you know, now it's been a few years, but Tom Thibodeau is, let's just say he's a little stubborn at times when it comes to the style of play, and it's not necessarily a modern style. So that's the only concern I would have if it was him coaching the Knicks, is what kind of a play style he would bring to the table. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, he's going to have to adjust if he wants to coach in the NBA again, especially with load management.
Yeah, definitely. The load management concerns are very, very true, especially when you see some of his former players just aren't able to last as long as you'd hope. And actually, being in New York, you saw that, you know, firsthand with Joakim Noah.
Definitely.
And let me end it with this. Who are some other players that you like in this draft, either in general or specifically for the Knicks?
Right now, as a lottery pick, I really like Obi Toppin. I like his athleticism. He reminds me of a young Amari Stoudemire. You know, if he improves defensively, he could be a Josh Smith kind of athleticism. And when it comes to a late first rounder, the 27th pick the Knicks have, I really like Aaron Naismith, but he might not be there by the time the Knicks pick. So Desmond Bane is another prospect I like. Jay Scrub as the second rounder pick. I also like Jalen Smith. There's a few prospects, you know, within the first round, the middle first round, the end of the first, even the early second round, that can probably blossom in the right situation.
One other thing I'll actually add to that. The reports have started coming out recently that LaMelo Ball really wants to play for the Knicks. Would you like him in a Knicks uniform?
LaMelo Ball in the Knicks uniform would be fantastic. The Knicks haven't had a point guard in it seems like since Raymond Felton put on the orange and blue. So we'll definitely welcome a LaMelo Ball with open arms here.
You know, I look at all the teams in the draft, and I do feel like the Knicks would be a team that could handle everything that you get when you're bringing on a member of the Ball family. And so I completely think that if all is said and done and that's where he ends up, I think it could be a very good fit. What I want to do now is I want to give you a chance to let our listeners know if you have any previous work or work you have coming out soon, and then where people can find you on social media.
Oh, absolutely. I go by Mikey Murphy. I'm the New York Knicks beat writer for Empire Sports Media. You can check me out on Twitter. Absolutely. My Twitter handle currently is Mikey441. That's my Twitter handle. And absolutely, see you there.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Mikey, for joining us. And maybe we'll talk again closer to draft time.
Awesome, Robin. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to all our guests. I definitely encourage you to check them out on social media and any other platforms that they are available. As far as we are concerned, if you missed any of our show on Dash Radio's Nothing Minute channel, make sure you check us out in podcast form. We can be found on Spotify, Stitcher, Podient, iTunes, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Again, this has been Robin Hoop bringing rich takes to the poorly informed. And until next week, we'll see you.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA Draft.
With the third pick in the 2018 NBA Draft.
With the first pick in the 1998 NBA Draft.
With the first pick in the Orlando Magic.
Michael Orlcandy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke.